Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Let's talk about training, but let's talk about where training needs to start, right? Not just like, okay, let's just jump into stuff. Where does training start? So why don't you run with that one?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's clear to say, you know, training as a whole, we're going to get to training as a point, you know, when it comes to tenure training, in-house training, and life cycle training, you know, for people that are already competent at what they do. The point we want to discuss today is the onboarding training, the start of somebody's journey. Last week, we spoke about recruitment and how we bring them in. And I think it's important to really kind of discuss how we train them the right way from day one. How do we get them involved? How do we get them on board and, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, you know, when it comes to our induction training? Now, I've worked with a lot of clients that have two-day training all the way through to a six-week induction plan. Every company is different, but the one thing you need to remember is that your training life cycle is dependent on who you are as a company, who you are as a brand, how much of a product offering you have. And the reason why, you know, some, and you might go, well, 2 days and they're out and running. Yes, because, you know, they're talking about two very simple products that you can have quick discussions with your customers with very little need. But one thing I hear from that is go, well, hang on a minute, you bring your people in within 2 days, they're onboarded, they're out and they're working within the third day. The problem is, so your brand training, your brand intro, your company policies must be this big compared to the rest of the 2 days. I still think it's a very important, no matter how long your company induction is to make sure you give them the right information. You sing about your brand, you talk about your products and services, because if you go in there and you don't do that, people aren't going to fall in love with your company. People aren't going to fall in love with what you're offering. And I think that's something really important to get across from day one is you need to sell them. As we talk about when we're, you know, talking about recruitment, you're selling them the dream of who you're working for. And I think that's a big thing to drill home, don't you, Jason?
Yeah, and that's always so important. I see a lot of companies who they see the induction portion, the onboarding of what you're talking about when somebody's coming onto the company. We talked a lot about that last week. When it comes to the training, they're just like checking boxes. It's HR, here's the forms, fill these out, do these things, and then get ready, and then it jumps into the training. Versus this onboarding, versus this induction, making them feel welcome. Like we talked about last week, showing them around the office or having them meet people. But even in the training is that onboarding. And I think what's super important is where training is picking up that onboarding induction from the admin side and making it relevant and relative to what they're going to be selling and doing. So it's not two parts, right? It's not here's the HR stuff. Okay, here's sales training, and then moving forward, it's here's the HR stuff, here's the company culture, and then here's why it matters in sales, and here's how we're going to run with that, right? It's about continuing that message and keeping people engaged and excited about why they're there, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we have these elongated ones, these, you know, these really long training plans of 6 weeks, we've also got to make sure we capture somebody's attention. And we're going to be talking about all of this and how we do that, because 6 weeks is a long time to be sat in a classroom. I mean, I get tired after one day. But, you know, there are people that are going to be sat there for 6 weeks end to end. And that's not to mention the academy afterwards, the graduation bay, the whatever you want to call it, the test bed, the nesting. Mm-hmm. There are so many different names for it about getting them up to speed. That can take a long time. I think one of the last companies I worked with had 6 weeks classroom and 6 weeks graduation.
Wow.
You know, we're talking, you know, what's that? You know, 3 months. Three months before they're even ready at full speed. But I think it's important to notice, no matter how long it is, we've got to make it relevant. We've got to make it right. and we've got to make it target driven throughout. So throughout all of this, we're going to be talking about proof of learning. We're going to be talking about the LMS structure. We're going to be talking about how we make sure that we keep people's attention from day one all the way through to week six. So there's so much to discuss. And what we want to do is we want to hear the problems that some of you face out there as well. And remember, if you're listening live, or you're listening post live, please send us messages and let us know, because it's something that we can pick up on next week, especially when it comes to kind of finding out how we keep people engaged. So day one, let's talk about the company. We need to make sure that we keep it to the point. There is something that has been relevant, and somebody asked before in a conversation I had, is it right to include kind of slides about your senior management, who your company are, who the wider business is, especially when it comes to your branding? Remember, day one has to pop. It has to be exciting. It has to be fun. So we're talking lunches. But remember, make sure you tell people you're providing lunch. We need to talk about videos. We need to talk about branding decks. Don't put everything on a PowerPoint. Nobody wants to sit there and look at slides all day. Now, when it comes to product, yes, granted, it has to happen from time to time because we need to take it in visually. Videos work, auditory work. So whether it's recordings or visuals or something that people can have, because that's what they need access to. If you're coming into a contact center that sells a specific product, if you can have the product there for people to have a look and feel, that's always something great as well. Remember, have your management there as well, because we want to do great introductions. Now, wider management, wider business, something that I see a lot of in inductions on day one when it comes to companies is they'll have photos on a slide deck of your marketing team, your finance team, your business development team that are out in the field. If your team are never going to come into contact with these people, you do not need it. Not to say that you can't discuss it, not to say that it can't be there, but you don't need a slide for every single person. I've witnessed two companies recently that have that, and you sit there looking at the content going,
oh, sounds painful.
I have no idea who this person is. This person was in HR 3 years ago, they then moved to finance, and you're talking company history. If they don't, if they're not there, they're not going to come into contact with it. You don't need it. Am I right?
100%. That sounds absolutely miserable. And definitely ineffective if you were to go through all that. And it's interesting because I inherently have done that in the past where I don't show the pictures of everyone. I kind of mention people, but more of an org chart structure, like an image showing kind of the hierarchy so people understand it. But you're right. I mean, if they're not interacting with the operation side, with the back end, with the VP of marketing, then why go through it? And the thing to keep in mind, training, as we're going to talk about, and everyone knows this fundamentally, but I think a lot of times people forget when they're in organizations, is training is having your people, your new hires, trying to drink water from a fire hose, right? Like, it's just so much info. And so if you're going to bombard people with info, remember, they're not going to remember most of it. So just be choosy in what you select and what you make important and what you spend that time with. And yeah, don't do death by PowerPoint. For sure.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. But day one should always be fun. It should be engaging because the worst thing you want is you want all of your new hires to turn up on day one and not come back on day two. That's what you don't want.
What do you think about this? We don't have this plan, but what do you think about people who they show up on day one and they don't come back day two? Like maybe one person, or I've even had this, I'm curious what your thoughts are, where some, you know, the team goes to lunch if we're not providing lunch on day one, and then somebody doesn't even come back from lunch. What would you say to that? What do you think off the cuff?
Well, something's definitely gone wrong off the cuff. First of all, I've just seen a comment. Hi, Rich, who's tuned in. The thought process for this at my point would be we've either missold them at the recruitment stage and all of a sudden, you know, we've kind of gone into too much detail in the morning, in the AM or in day one if they're not coming back on day two. And the fact is the job isn't what they were sold.
Yeah.
That's what I would say is usually the kicker. And that's what I would say is usually something that stands out. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen. Yeah. And I'm sure many of you who either, you know, thinking the same thing at this point, oh, it's happened to me, or, you know, it's happened to somebody else I work for. It's going to happen. But I wouldn't say it's anything bad. I personally would put it down to a missold job, or maybe the brand isn't what it is. Maybe, you know, at the beginning, and again, it's circumstantial, if they spoke about comp plans in the morning and it's not where they told they were going to be earning that kind of money, and again, missold the role from day one, or they've turned up on day one and the building is an absolute mess. I was being politically correct then. And
it is, you know, it's your live stream. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, true. I don't want to get banned after day one.
Oh, that's probably best.
Yeah. So for me, in a nutshell, it's making sure that everything is sold from end to end, right the way through. It's like a customer journey. You know, when they're buying a product, if a product gets returned on day one, well, then obviously the product is not a right fit for one reason or another.
Yeah, and it was either oversold, underexplained, something happened, something was missing. In my experience of the few times that's happened to me, typically what it is in short induction training cycle stuff like telemarketing, where it's, you know, a day and then getting on the phone by the second day. And what I've done over time is the recruiting part really well, explaining it really well, setting the right expectation of the job and what is really involved. And what I feel happens is sometimes people know it, they hear that, they agree to it. They think, yes, I'll do this based on how you explained it to me. Then they show up day one and they start going through the training and go, yeah, I don't need the job that bad. Or this, like, they agreed to it. You did a good job at recruiting it. And then they saw it and they, oh, shoot. It's like, you know, getting to the front of the line at the roller coaster. You're like, you know, it's a roller coaster. And then you're looking at it and hearing everyone screaming. You're like, yeah, no, I'm going to use this little chicken exit out the side because I'm just not going to do it. So yeah. I think that happens every once in a while, just as a side tangent.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, jumping back to the previous point as well, you know, Richard said the same thing. Ineffective recruitment can cause so many issues along the way. And I couldn't agree more with that. And I think that is something that definitely stands out. Especially for that initial failure in personnel attending at any point throughout training. Now, as training goes on and as training develops, and let's say, for example, you lose people at week three or week four, that for me is something very different. I would put that down to either business or training and things like that. But again, we'll talk about that later on. It's on the list, I know. But for me, a lot of people sometimes find it harder to cope. And as we said in the recruitment phase last week, is it's very hard for people to maintain their facade for however, you know, for the longer duration of the training. You know, day one, you turn up and you're this happy, smiley, bubbly person like, yeah, I'm ready. Train me. And week four, it's like, oh, God, another day of training.
Yeah. Another day of training, or now I got to do this some more. It's like any relationship, right? Like, it's all new and exciting in the very beginning. And then the real stuff comes out given enough time, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So look, as we talk about onboarding as well, when it comes to day one, and we've spoke about PowerPoints, we spoke about keeping things neat and to the point. I think it's also relevant to make sure that, you know, when you go into day one is, and Jason quite rightly brought it up a minute ago about the overload of information. The same goes for content on day one. I've worked with some companies that are very good and will keep training to a very minimal on day one to ease people into something that might be a larger product scale or something that's going to come down the hill versus people that don't really have that. And it's always a good approach to ease people into their content. So let's say, for example, you have a very large product manual. Okay. Don't give them the whole manual on day one. There is nothing worse than coming home with a tree, you know, in your hands that you think, oh, God, I've got to read all of this. I've got to know all of this. Why? Break it up. So, you know, if you're going in there and you want somebody to start looking through some content or material out of your 100-page document, you know, you give them the first 10 pages that you're going to be going through chronologically or the first parts that you're going to be talking about in training, just so people can get a heads up. Because, again, that could be something that turns somebody off when they step into that training program. Likewise, again, if some companies, as they do now, move it onto tablets and move it into a digital age, which is what we want in an ideal world, because people have got access to knowledge bases and websites and things like that. Again, give them PDF access or give them ebook access to only what they need in the short term. Don't overload them so they think, oh God, I've got to read all of this. It's like giving a kid a book report, right? Let's say it's a 100-page book. You know, you spread it out over time, 10 pages a day over 2 weeks, rather than you get to the first day and you think, right, you've got to read 200 pages now. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, and I think that's so true, especially what you said about that first day. And again, I mentioned this kind of in passing a few minutes ago, but I think the biggest thing, this is what I see with sales managers, sales leaders, and especially trainers, is most people, and I've done it myself, we just forget what it's like to be new. If you've made your way up and you're now a trainer, you're now a sales manager, you're a hiring manager, something in there, that means you've been in that role most likely for a while, or in the industry for a while, or just, you know, you have enough experience. You've reached that point where you have the confidence and you can back it up, and you forget. You literally forget what it's like to be new on day one, overwhelmed, no idea what's going on, with a ton of stuff thrown at you. I know for me, I hadn't been new in a long time. So the last time I was new at something was 2002. And then the next time something occurred for me was 2010. Brand new industry, no idea what I was doing, no training. Basically, my boss at the time, who hired me as a manager, said, okay, let's sit in this dark conference room with no lights on and I can't see. Look at the projector, use the CRM. And I don't have a script, but let's role play and then fill it out. And he played, the first role play was hard customer, extreme hard customer. That's what he hit. And I was sweating bullets. It was dark in there. And I had forgot what it was like to be new. It was so agonizing and so miserable, right? And so I think that's the biggest thing, is remember what it's like to be new. Give that little doses on day one. Just work towards it relative to your, what that speed to competency that you're looking for. But I think that's a big one. I mean, again, sales managers forget that too. Like, they just see it all, right? They understand it, and they forget when they're handed that new salesperson out of training. Sometimes we forget to be empathetic to where they're at in their journey.
And for those of you listening out there, and not to overload you with too much information as we keep talking about, what Jason is referring to is a great training model that I like to use, especially for coaches and leadership, and that is the conscious competence learning matrix. You have 3 to 4 stages of going through growth, of learning, till something becomes, conscious, and you don't have to think about it, you just do it. One of the best kind of theories that I was always given on this, and the kind of way to break down the methodology, is when you learn to drive. When you first get in a car, you get in the car and you have to figure out where the keyhole is and where the kind of, the accelerators, the brake is. If you're driving stick, it's the manual or kind of the gears. And you have to think about everything as you do it. And eventually, as you go through that, more and more things start to become just self-aware, and you just do it without even thinking. Then the gears become natural. Then the journey becomes natural. And then eventually you're thinking of where to go. Where's my journey A to B? Ignore using sat-nav as an example. Until eventually I know that I've got to drive to Jason's house. I just get in the car, do it, gone. I don't even think about how I'm getting there. It just happens naturally. It's a really good theory to look at. And if you're in a leadership position, it's good to understand, because when you go through the, and I'm not going to go with the saying, for example, there are known knowns and unknown knowns, and there's so many different variations of it. When you first get into that, most people, leaders and trainers, assume everybody is at stage two. So they assume that they know what they don't know. But in actual fact, they don't know what they don't know. And you go through that process, but check it out, read it. It's a great theory to use. And don't assume that everybody is at stage two, when in actual fact, anybody new, as you say, Jason, is at stage one.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. And again, looking at all of this within the lens of your products, the depth of training that you need to do for someone to get the basic level of competency before They're going to get some live fire, right? Some on the job experiences, which is where they're going to learn the most anyway, where it's going to stick. You know, it's what is it? Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face, right? Like until you go and have those sales conversations, all the training is great. So you got to figure out how to get them there. But then, you know, that timeline, like you said, whether it's a 6-week training or it's a 2-day training, and then just making sure that unconscious incompetence, I think, is the first one. You don't know what you don't know. Yep. You're just helping them through those phases.
Yeah. Unconscious incompetence.
Incompetence. Yep.
Check it out. Yep. It's a great theory, but it's very confusing to say and remember, which is why whenever I say it, I always have my notes in front of me.
There you go. Yeah. Don't know what you don't know. Just remember, they don't even know what they don't even know. And so you want to help them get there. And there's only so much that we can handle.
Exactly. And this is what really steps in when it comes to their speed to competency, because the quicker you understand that, the quicker that you realize where people are in this matrix, the quicker you can get them up and running. Now, there are so many theories out there in the marketplace right now that if you go and research how long it takes to bring a call center up to a competent level, it will vary dependent on sales, service, and product, and personality, because you've got people that learn at different levels and learn at different speeds. Now, don't get me wrong. This is one of the biggest kind of areas that people pick up on, and the fact that, oh, well, everybody's finished training at the same time. Why are they not delivering at the same time? Because everybody's different. Everybody learns at a different stage. You bring it back to when we're born and when we're infants, the same way that people start talk, or people, children start talking at, you know, 9 months, 10 months, 11 months, children start walking 9 months, whatever. And it's important not to compare apples with apples, because people are different. People go through different learning cycles, different life cycles. But you never know. Somebody who might take a little bit longer to become competent at what they do ends up having a longer life cycle or a longer tenure and may actually deliver better results because they've honed what they're trying to do.
Right. So how do you then, given that, right? Because then it comes down to what's the speed to competency? Do you pick the and competency being enough for them not to completely bomb when they're on the phone, right? Let's just be honest, right? You're not going to train them up so that they're flawless and their closing percentage is amazing. I mean, they still have to get out there on the field and, you know, practice, right, in the environment. But what do you think? Like, what? How do you blend that, knowing that you've got some people who are quick, some people who are going to take their time, they're going to process it. What do you use as some kind of metric to decide what that length of training should be?
Do you know what? Again, every company is different. You have to put your own metrics in place. I mean, there's a lot of industry standard metrics that you can kind of use with proof of learning, how quickly they start selling. Putting in a big marker, which is your quality and compliance markers, where you have those in place from day one. I think some of the best contact centers that I've worked with in the past have a lot of different metrics in place throughout the graduation bay and the nesting period. And what they usually do is they use a glide path, and they go from A to B, making sure they're going along the right chain and hitting the markers, getting better and better as time progresses. Now, as more time progresses as a call center, as more time progresses, as you bring in more and more inductees into the business, I think it's also important to remember to hone those KPIs and those metrics. Don't just put them in place once and think that's it. It's governed and that's what we should abide by. You know, we should always be looking to tweak and improve, because if you're not improving, you're not moving forward. So that's not to say that all of a sudden, oh, hang on a minute, we've had our stats here for this amount of time. Let's bring them to here. It's what works for you as a business. And don't compare you to ourselves to others around you. And it goes back to what we were saying about a minute ago, is because everybody does their own thing. You do you. What works for you? Because if you shorten those metrics or you change your goalposts, you could actually screw yourselves over in the long term. I mean, for you, Jason, what do you think's a good kind of couple of metrics that call centers should have in place to kind of monitor this as they go through?
Hey, it's Jason Cutter of Cutter and Cat. We'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success you want for them. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps from where you are now to where you'd like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's with training, systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything in between, email info@callcenterconfidence.com today, and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we might be able to help you. And now back to Oliver and I chatting about call centers.
I think one of the biggest things, and the quality that you're saying is important, the compliance is important. It's tough because when somebody's new, even if they have the best intentions, right? They have the most positive, well-meaning intentions of being compliant and having high quality. There's so much going on. They're going to miss things, right? That's also where as an organization, you need to give them checklists. You need to give them scripts for the things that matter the most for the compliance, right? Like train them what not to say, and then give them the guide rails, physical printed guide rails, and say, here, when you get to this portion of the conversation, just read this, say these things, like just don't freestyle, right? Please don't freestyle on my phone calls. And so when it comes to that portion, and so I think that's important, understanding that people aren't going to have it all. They're not going to be 100% compliant if you don't support them in the right way. And then I think what I love what you said, which is that nesting kind of supportive period, which I see more and more organizations building and doing, which is great, which is here's the training. We're going to teach you what you need to know about the product. Then what we're going to do is nesting, which means I have a lot of support percentage-wise, ratio-wise for the people there, right? So it's not like on the floor. It's I have this ratio. So somebody's basically, you know, on the field next to you, helping you all the time so that you can figure it out. And I think that's important. And then I think it's about the closing percentage and the at-bats and that kind of KPI as far as the performance of how somebody's doing and are they getting it relative to what they're working on. But in those phases, so I think the initial one, if we're talking about classroom versus nesting, then the classroom is about tests. It's about I'm teaching you information, you need to know these things about the product or the industry. You have to take these tests. And then for me, I have adopted go, no go testing in training, which is here's a book, you know, here's a written test on the computer. And if you can't pass this at a certain level, you're not moving forward. Right? You're either redoing it or you're let go. Because if you can't retain this basic stuff after this training period, then you're basically ineffective or dangerous, one of the two. And then from there, it's about, okay, what's the next metric? And then what's the next metric? Of course, you want an agent who's selling 2-3 deals a day, depending on what your business is. But it's stages. And you have to know that each stage, what equals success at the minimum that you need, you know, and not just all the outliers who they show up and they're amazing or they get lucky.
Yeah. And I think a very valid point you brought up there is the go, no go. Too many people will just put bums on seats because they're in training and they're passing through because they need the headcount. Mm-hmm. And that is probably one of the worst things you can do because you can end up screwing up your entire life cycle. You could end up screwing up the whole team and it's something to think about. So for me, I think one of my very first contact center jobs that I did when I was put into a sales role on the phone is we had a full-on end of training assessment. Now, we did 3 weeks training and 3 weeks graduation to make sure that we were right. At the end of the first week, you know, we got the well done, great job. Oh, you've all been amazing. You know, fantastic. Week two, we got the kicking. I think we got the, you know, oh, you didn't do as well as week one. You know,
interesting.
I think that's probably standard. Then they did that to every induction group. And I even remember the meeting on the Friday evening of when we absolutely got that rollicking. And I remember who it was as well. So if you're watching or you're listening, I remember you. And
how long ago was this? When was this again?
We're still very good friends. This was 2008, I want to say.
Got it. So a while ago, and it left an impression, you still remember the person.
Oh, we do.
And the conversation.
Hey, we have many more years of good working collaborative fun after that. And then jumping into the third week, it was the final assessments and everything else. And when we did that, we had our, you know, even though we'd been on the phones, we'd had a go, no go at the end of training. We also had a very in-depth go-no-go review at the end of the 3 weeks. And I think that was really crucial And I think it was something great. It's not what I've seen a lot of people do and a lot of companies implement, but it really sits down there and you've got a detailed report from all your management information, your MIs and everything else from day one all the way through to day six that really sits down and builds an image of the person you're putting out there. And if you're not comfortable, it's time to speak up as the trainer, the operations manager, the grab bay manager, the training manager, whatever it is. Don't just throw somebody out there, because remember, that reflects on you as the trainer, you know? And if you're putting somebody out there, you've got to be very careful with what you're doing. So that's why speed to competency is very important. So if you've got all of these measurements and metrics in place, you can deliver a full-rounded, ready-to-go call center agent, sales, CX, whatever it might be, going out there with as much information, tools, and sign-off as possible. Because then at which point that person only gets stronger. Because what do they say? What's the percentage that you learn on the job? Is it 70% that you pick up when you're actually doing it? I mean, those metrics change every single month when you read a different training article. But it's give or take that on-the-job training is the best way to do it. And if you've got somebody who knows what they're talking about, they've got the tools in front of them. And when I talk about tools, I'm not just talking about the products in front of them. You've got a knowledge base, so you haven't got to keep putting your hand up. You've gone through all of your proof of learnings in the e-learning system, your LMS. LMS is crucial. And we, trust me, I've got a lot to say about LMS, and I know Jason has as well. You know, when you get to all of this, these are the things that make up your agents. And that's the most important thing on my part.
And in the conversation that we're talking about, well, we'll get to LMS. That's probably a whole nother episode, but
we should just
what you were just talking about, right? With the week one, the week two, the week three, this test, what I was mentioning about a final exam, what are the KPIs? What are the metrics? One of the big keys, and this is where I see so many companies struggle just in general with their sales operations, is that there's not enough metrics in place and data tracking that is objective based. The problem is a lot of organizations just operate subjectively. Well, this person seems to be doing well, so let's move them up. Well, they seem to be good and everyone likes them, so let's make them a manager, right? They seem to get it and be closing enough deals, so let's put them on the floor, right? They seem to be asking good questions in training, so they must know what we're teaching them. And so let's go ahead and put them forward and move them through. And the challenge with that is that's subjective. And from a legal standpoint, that could be challenging, because if there's favorites or there's things like that, companies can get into trouble. But also just from a management perspective, it's like, why did this person move forward and this one didn't? Well, they seem like they got it better. Or why did we put all these people together? They're all a hot mess. Well, we just needed to move everyone forward, versus here's some objective metrics along the way in training. And most trainers will say, well, you just can't do that. There's no ways to do it. Yeah, you can. You just test them and you have these things in place. And then you hold people accountable to that. And then you draw the lines in what you want. So it's really about putting something objective in every way possible to determine if somebody's moving along your continuum that you want, right? Towards your conscious unconscious competence, conscious competence.
That's just going to keep coming back to haunt us now, isn't it?
Yep.
So, you know, you get the idea, you get kind of where we're headed with all of this. And as we say, you know, put your metrics in place, write them down. And if you ever want to talk about your metrics, guys, don't hesitate about getting in touch where we can give you some tips and some advice. Remember, we set up Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat specifically here as a tool to help you improve and become a call center hero. Whether you are somebody on the front lines dealing with customers day in, day out, get in touch if you want help with something. The same way as it goes all the way up through your team leaders, your supervisors, your operations, your managers, your call center managers, directors, C-suite, whatever it is, we're here to provide help. And this is a completely free tool that we've set up here to provide you with advice and also talking points for our next episodes. So not only can we do that, we can integrate it with our series, with our episodes, and we'll be able to bring you up here as well so you can ask your questions to everybody else. Because remember, what you're feeling, I guarantee somebody else is feeling somewhere. All those training managers out there that have groups of people, and I'm telling you now, companies that are inducting every single day, there's probably about 300 inductions happening somewhere in some state right now. And they're going, wow, what metrics should we put in place for this? We are here to help. So please get in touch. All right, moving on from speed to competency, because we could talk about that forever. All right. How do we reduce the turnover that we're going to lose through speed to competency? Because if somebody's not ready, we're going to lose that person. If somebody's failing at their job, we're going to lose them. We're going to lose them in training, in grad bay, in nesting, early life. All right. There are so many reasons out there. And we kind of touched upon it earlier on in this conversation today about why we lose people at certain points. What have you seen, Jason, throughout training, throughout inductions and onboarding that's really kind of turned people off? Or, in other words, why we've had to get rid of people at the same time, forced attrition, forced churn?
I think some of it goes back to the perpetual conversation we've had and will probably always be a part of each conversation we have, which is the recruiting, right? So making sure you have the right people you're bringing on board that are going to be the highest and best fit, that are going to be good when they go through onboarding, they start trading, and they're more likely to make it through. I think that's one of the biggest things. And then I think it's one of the biggest parts, one of the biggest challenge I see, again, with training, with sales managers, with most of us humans, is that if we're not careful, we will assume everyone is like us. We will assume everyone learns like we do, takes in information like we do, processes it, likes the same thing. So I remember an early experience I had with this where, you know, I like reading books, underlining them, going through them. I worked for a boss years and years ago, and I would write these long emails. He would ask me a question in email, and I would just respond with this long email. And I wouldn't get a response. And then he would literally call me and be like, okay, can you just explain it to me? He was an auditory type of learner, right? He liked to listen to things. He didn't read books. He listened to audiobooks. And I realized, oh, not everyone likes to read stuff like I do. Right. So some people are going to learn from videos, from audio, from reading it, from experiential stuff. Some people process in different ways. And so I think one of the biggest things to help with that turnover, which we'll talk about my thoughts on that after you get a chance too, is making sure you're building the training with as many options so that people can learn how they best learn. Not always at the pace, right? Because you have to keep it within the window that makes sense from a business need standpoint, right? So if it's 6 weeks or if it's 1 week, you can't just stretch it out for people, just, you know, for everybody, just in case. However, what you can do is give them everything. So that's why I always build trainings that are, you know, written training, an audio training, and a video training with each module. And then people can pick if they're doing something online that then is then supplemented with in-person or live, they can pick what's going to resonate with them, how they can learn, instead of being like, okay, everyone's going to watch this PowerPoint slide and then you're going to lose 2/3 of the people.
I think it's important to adapt to people's learning styles. You have to. And I've seen people leave because they haven't been catered for. Now, I'm not saying we should bend over backwards and do everything different for every single person that walks through the door, because you do that, you'll never end up running an induction and you'll confuse everybody. But a blended learning approach is key, because otherwise you will lose people. People will churn because, as you say, somebody hasn't understood something. It's the same way that, you know, people learn from writing, visuals, visual, kinesthetic, and auditory. When we talk about those different learning styles, they are there for a reason. For me, I love to play with something to learn how to use it. If somebody tells me how to use it, it doesn't go in. It goes in one ear and out the other. I have to physically either do it or be shown how to use it. And that's just the way I'm built. And that comes for me. One of the biggest things that I think confuses people are, and again, this is in my experience and this isn't for everybody, is system usage. Not everybody is computer literate. And some people come into a job understanding that they're going to be on the phones, they're going to be speaking to people, where all of a sudden, 80% of what they're doing is now data entry, data capture, yeah, building this, booking this, ordering this. And it throws people for six, because somebody can come into your interview and smile, be articulate, come across, be bubbly, but you put them in front of a computer, which is why it's important. Again, you're clear, and you even give somebody computer tests or, you know, aptitude tests when they're going through the recruitment process.
you have to. That's such a good point, because one of the things that'll happen is you say, well, if they're not great on computer, it's fine because they can do the talking part, which is the hardest. But you've got to be able to do it all, right, at some level and get moving forward. So I think that's huge. And I think the other thing, too, for where I see training, you know, let's say alienate people where they just don't want to make it through or they can't or they struggle, is where a company will try to do things at scale. They're trying to save money or they're trying to take the easy way out, and they just create video training modules. They say, okay, here's these 40 hours of videos you're going to watch this week and take some tests, and this should train you, right? Like sitting a kid down in front of the TV and hoping that the TV teaches your kid everything and raises your kid for you. It's like, it doesn't work that way, right? And what's interesting, for some people, it does, right? Yeah. Like, I'm really good at watching videos and learning online and taking notes and being a good student, and I don't need to interact with someone, so that's great. But that's rare, right? The pandemic has exposed that a lot with, you know, before the pandemic, in our own lives, there are people who did online school, online college, online whatever, and it worked really well for them. Like, that was a good fit. Others chose to go in person because they knew they needed that interaction. During the pandemic, it made everybody do that, especially schools all across the US. And then you see the kids who they're okay with the online learning, and then the ones that needed the more interaction, right? Which ones are okay with video, which ones aren't. And so you want to make sure, if you have a video module, do an in-person or video or like a some interactive thing to solidify it. Don't try to just take the easy way out with all videos.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, and that makes sense. And I think one of the big things is making sure that everything is accessible to everyone. I think that's, you know, in summary, giving people the option. And if you are unsure about what to do with your materials or how to edit or change or tweak your content, you know, seek out professional help. Go and speak to somebody and say, hey, what can I do with this? How can I make this something different? You can always mix it up. PowerPoints, videos, you know, audio clips, snippets, things to do, simulations. There are so many products out there in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Even CRMs now, for example, a lot of CRMs will come with tutorials on how to do X, Y, and Z. But again, everybody's going to learn differently. Everybody's going to pick up something different, and we can adapt accordingly.
And what I would say too, because this is the part I don't want to forget, and it's going to be somewhat controversial, maybe. In the sales process, when you're selling, a really good salesperson, like a professional, not just somebody who's really slick, but like somebody who's like a professional, they're getting prospective buyers to do something uncomfortable. They know it's a good fit. They know they can help them. But the easiest thing is for us humans to just do nothing and stay in our comfort zone and stay comfortable and do nothing, right? So by doing something and making a choice and buying a product or a service, you're making a decision that could be dangerous. Our primal mind doesn't like that kind of stuff. So in my opinion, a sales professional is actually persuading and moving people out of their comfort zone in the right way. And there's always going to be some level of cancellation. Some people are just not going to be able to handle that long term. They're going to cancel. And so that's a whole different topic. But I say that because there's also that which in training, I would never expect a full training class to move forward and everyone graduate, because I think as a good trainer, like a good coach, like for a sports team, you're pushing people out of their comfort zone. You're pushing people out of their boundaries in good ways, in positive ways, with the right intent, right? It's not like the beatings will continue until morale improves. It's, I'm going to train you and I'm going to coach you and I'm going to help you, but it's going to be new and difficult and some people aren't going to make it. Right? Yeah. Like the military. And so I think there's also that. And I think you've got to always examine if you have your fallout of people who aren't making it through training or shortly after training, is it the recruiting? Is it the trainer? Or is that the people who just weren't going to be tough enough to be on the floor? So that's good that they were selected out by you or by them. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really valid point. You know, Not everybody's going to be able to pick up and do what you expect them to do. But also, I just want to add to that, that most contact centers have so many different areas within the business. You've also got to remember that people were recruited or people were hired. You'd like to think people were recruited because of not only of their skills, but also because of their attitude. They're who they are, the characteristics, the values that make them up. So
culture fit with the organization, right?
Exactly. So yeah. Before you make that judgment call to cull, get rid, throw them out, is there something else in the business they can be doing? Is there another role that they could fulfill? And I'm not to say that that's not going to happen today, tomorrow, or whatever. But yeah. Let's say, for example, you know, in a week's time, and let's say you're recruiting for an inbound sales agent over the phone. You're working for somebody to do that, and that's your recruitment plan. And your next induction in 2 weeks is for e-chat, web chat, live chat, whatever you want to call it. And you find out that during this induction that this person isn't maybe as articulate as you would like them to be. So they can't talk about the product you way that you want them to speak over the phone or to have the brand ambassador image that you want to get across. They can't do that. Can they do it through typing? Can they do it through text? Can they work back office? Are there queues? Are there something in the CRM? There's always a job for somebody. And if you've recruited the right person for the right reasons, figure something out if you can move them somewhere. And like I said, put them on the back burner. I've worked in inductions before where I've pulled two or three people out and I said, hey, guys, look, this job isn't right for you. I've been very honest with them. And it's a difficult conversation to have because you're letting somebody go who may have quit or left the job. But you turn around to them and say, I've got something for you, but it's going to be a week. It's going to be 2 weeks away, but this is right up your street. Or maybe you integrate them earlier and do them side by sides until they are ready to go into training. There's so many different options. I've met with somebody who has literally got the best personality ever, but the way they speak is not right. So e-chat was the way to go. Behind the scenes is the way to go. There's so many options. And I think that's something to consider moving forward. And also, like I say, every call center wants good people. Great companies are built on great people. Remember that.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I always go back to in that, when looking at it from a leadership standpoint and personnel and playing more chess than checkers with the people on the team, is Jim Collins wrote a book called Good to Great a long time ago. And part of that, which he talks about, which makes good companies great and the great companies that have been around for a long time and sustain and are always growing, is the culture. And part of that is the two parts, which is the first step as a leader in those organizations is to get the right people on the bus and get the wrong people off the bus. So that's what you're talking about with the attitude, the culture fit, the desire to be there, the openness to change, to all of those different things that would make somebody a good fit for your organization with your mission and vision and core values. Then what happens is you want to get the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus. And once you've got them on the bus, then it's about getting the right people in the right seats. And so when you have that person, you bring them in the sales, because I've been there. I've been there where by lunch on day one, I remember sitting down with this one woman and she's like, I don't think I should be here in sales. And I was like, I don't think you should be here in sales. And we both realized it. And I was like, then my mind was thinking, who hired you for sales? Like, the whatever they did, they missed the mark. And shortly that afternoon, we were able to make some changes, get her going more on the customer service side. And she was a rock star for like 3 years in customer service. Like, it was the perfect fit. So she was the right person to get on the bus. And it's about that. And we won't talk about it here because we're going to finish up here in a minute. But one of the things to watch out for is when you do those changes, a lot of people who don't want to work very hard or afraid of being fired because of their performance will try to raise their hand to get onto an easier seat on the bus instead of pushing themselves or trying. And you can end up with some mass exoduses of your sales team where people are flooding to go to the easier departments, easier air quotes, or easier roles, like put me on e-chat instead of putting me on the phone because it's hard and I might miss my numbers. And then all of a sudden you have a very empty sales floor because everyone's run for other things. So that one you got to be careful with. I know from my experience.
Yeah, no, I think one of the things as well I've seen people try and jump ship to try and do that is just remember that the minute you move into that role, you are going to be hit in the pocket. And I think comp plans is definitely something that comes into this circle. And I know, Jason, it's a big push for you and for me as well. And I think we're going to start with that next week because we are it's more than a 5-minute conversation to be talking about comp plans, especially in training and especially getting it right for the right people. Because again, how you explain comp plans in training, how you go through it, how you break down. I've also seen people not return from day one because they've been broken down on comp plans.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think that's a great place to stop. Appreciate everyone watching. Thanks, Oliver, for hosting this on the various channels for the most part, saying LinkedIn, which is where we spend most of our time. And people can find you also on the screen there that's available. Or if you're listening after the replay, you know, Oliver at thecatalyst.com with two T's. And then my information, people can find me, Jason, at cutterconsultinggroup.com. Or I think I'm still the number one ranked Jason Cutter on Google. So you can always find me that way.
Winning.
That works as well. It took me a while, but I got there. I think I'm still there. So, and then any final thoughts? I know that you had on your side tuned into Clubhouse and was broadcasting there. So people are on Clubhouse. That's another alternative option. We'll just keep improving. I know we have website stuff coming up, logo stuff. Anything else here before we send it off?
No, I think we're good. Like we said, branding's coming, website's coming, logos are coming. It's just getting more and more popular, and also the people watching this. And I think it's important to say to everybody who is listening post live, you know, you are just as important as everybody watching while it's live at the same time. And like I said, please keep your comments and messages coming to us, because I think it's really important that we stay on top of all the relevant information that you guys want to hear. Obviously, Rich, thanks very much for joining us. I saw your comment. Yeah, look, they're going to be online. And just to be clear, you can go and watch them either on Jason's profile, mine for this episode. And also when the website and everything else launches, you will be able to see all of the previous episodes on the website. And eventually they're going to be put into a podcast for you, so you can access them at your own leisure, Spotify, Apple, the usual places as and when. But in the meantime, that's it from me. Thank you very much for joining today. It's been a great week. Jason, thank you very much. As always, it's always a pleasure hosting this with you. Episode number 5 down, the beginning of training.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.